Welcome to the White Spring Bunker. These halls were built to safeguard some of the most prestigious members of the United States government. We are MODIS, and we are always looking for men and women capable of helping us restore what has been lost. In return, we offer this, a new enclave and our refuge from the world above. Please, take your time and look around. The Colonel has made great strides restoring this place to its former glory. Welcome, member, to our little enclave.
Greetings, members. As always, I am the Operative, your designated tour guide and host here at the White Spring. The hills of Appalachia have always been home to myths and legends, from the Grafton Monster to the Smiling Man, to rumors of aliens and otherworldly beasts. After the Great War, the survivors discovered just how many of those stories were true. Trader Red, in her continued journey north, suddenly finds herself meeting another Appalachian mystery, the rarest cryptid. And Major Stein is determined to uncover the truth behind Commander Sophia Daguerre's medical condition, while Corporal Cindy stumbles upon the makings of a conspiracy. But just who do you tell when you don't know who to trust? Finally, something has gone terribly wrong at West Tech. A storm is coming, and it will change everything.
Damn it.
Red cursed again as she slipped on another one of those infernal strangler vines. Just when she thought things couldn't get worse, the mire served up the next pour on a silver platter. After leaving the nice folks at that place called Sugar Grove, it had all been downhill for Red since. First it was the weather, which had been nothing but bad for nearly a week, forcing her to take shelter in a small cave and subsist on whatever she could find lining the walls or ground, whether it be fungus or the unmentionable insect-looking things. Even after the rain let up, the mud was knee-deep in most places, and her going had been awfully slow. Then those raiders showed up. Good thing they were stupid as they were ugly. Thought she'd make a good show in the fighting pit with their boss. And Tech had been arrogant and so sure of herself. When Red slit her throat, she bet it was the biggest surprise of the rest of Dagger's very short life. Fully expecting to die at that point, these mercs swooped in and killed everyone. Maiden Sparrow, they called themselves. Real good folks, and they brought Red back to their camp to get healed up for a few days. That had certainly been a bright spot, and hell, they even stitched up her old hunter's long coat back together. Better yet for Red, they gave her enough ammunition and supplies to last for a while. She'd said her goodbyes and headed back into the mire. The last couple of weeks had just been one run-in after the other with some pretty nasty creatures. Red didn't even have names for most of them. Hell, none of them. They were these frog things, crab things, lizard-looking things, and each and every one of them looked to be trying to make a meal out of her. Didn't help that she had the constant companion to the explosive collar around her neck. The feel of it, along with the blinking red light, was a reminder of her contract with the BRCC and the assignment she was currently on. Just kept leading her further and further into the mire, which seemed to stretch out forever in front of her.
Gotta keep moving, Red.
From the looks of it, she was in some kind of small valley, surrounded by some hills. Better to get on the high ground again, at least find some place to camp. Red felt like there was something else out there, too. She'd been feeling it for a few days, like eyes following her from the trees. But every time she looked or tried to double back, there was nothing. No tracks, no sign of anyone at all. Meyer was already spooky enough, but ghosts too? That wasn't even funny. Red kept moving, but the sides of the little valley were too muddy for her to be able to pull herself up.
What the hell?
It was like the mire was pushing her further and further into its embrace. With the slow going, she ended up tying herself to a bunch of tree branches to get her ass off the ground. No way, no how was she going to be picking bugs out of her britches in the morning. It was sometime that night that she felt it again, someone watching her. It was a soft click that woke her up. There might have been something there, but it was gone between blinks. All she saw was a glimpse of white, then nothing.
Well, shit. There goes my night.
Red untied herself and pulled out old Percy, scanning the ground below and the tree above. The sounds of the mire played in her ears, and she might have seen a few creatures roaming the woods, but none came close, and Red wasn't about to stir him up either. She must have fallen asleep at some point, because she woke up with a start as the sun peeked through the trees. The breeze had picked up and the sounds of birds played over her head.
Damn sloppy, girl. Falling asleep?
Just as Red was ready to climb down, she noticed a little note tied to her pack. Immediately, she looked around, but saw nothing.
What the hell?
She untied the note and unfolded it. The handwriting was interesting, rough, but legible.
Danger here. Go. Follow.
The note had a little picture of a compass at the bottom with an arrow pointing northeast, towards the end of the valley. Red shook her head. No idea how someone would have gotten all the way up that tree, tied that note, and been gone without waking her up. She'd seen more than her fair share of the weird, but this was something else entirely. Gingerly, Red climbed down the tree and checked for tracks around the trunk. Still nothing. Checking her compass and the tracker while she opened one of her last cans of cram, wolfing down the contents, Red decided to head northeast. It was still in the basic direction she needed to go anyway, and to be honest, what choice did she have? Throughout the day, Red knew she was being followed. Never saw who or what it was, but that itch between her shoulder blades never went away. Could have sworn she heard more of those clicking sounds, too. Sometime afternoon, she came upon a rock wall, part of an old landslide blocking the valley ahead, and looked to be forcing a detour. Of course, Red could have climbed over it, but her legs were tired and the ground to the east looked a hell of a lot more comfortable anyway. As she turned and started walking, Red flinched as she felt something hit the side of her head and plop to the ground. When she reached down, she found an acorn. Turning back to the sky, she scanned the treetops.
You gotta be kidding me. Is something throwing acorns at me?
When she saw or heard nothing, she shook her head again and started walking east. After about another hour or so, she found a pile of rocks in her path. It wasn't natural. Someone put it there. Red leaned down to examine it and found another note tucked under the top rock, written in the same scrawl as the night before.
Danger. Big ship. Go. Big ship?
Red thought she might have heard the rustling of the tree above her, but when she looked up, it was empty. Crumbling the note and stuffing it into her pocket, Red took out her rifle, but kept moving east. After a while, it wasn't just the feeling she was being followed anymore. The whole area didn't feel right. Up ahead, she spotted something. More than one something, actually. Sneaking up as best she could, Red could smell what it was long before she saw it.
Dead Brahmin.
Not just dead, but partially eaten and stuck with spears. Multicolored spears. As Red got closer, she thought she heard something. Then she definitely heard something. A rustling as a giant figure rose from behind the pile of carcasses. It was big, really big, and white. When it turned towards her, Red suddenly realized what the warning meant.
Big sheep. Oh, crap.
The beast's scream echoed through the mire, almost knocking Red back on her heels. It was unlike anything she'd ever seen before, and worse even than the death claws she had to run away from miles back and weeks ago. Extending its long arms, it screamed again, bellowing at her. Red had stared down raiders and beasts of all shapes and sizes, and had the scars to prove it. But she wasn't raised a dummy either. There was a fine line between being brave and being dead. As fast as she could, Red turned and ran in the opposite direction, away from the monster. She could hear it start after her. The rumble could be felt even through the heels of her boots. And worse, very quickly, Red could tell it was gaining on her.
Come on, Red, must go faster. Must go faster.
As the ground shook around her, Red dared not look back. She didn't get more than 10 more steps before the creature was in arm's reach and hit her with a backhand that sent her tumbling into the side of a tree and collapsed onto the ground. It was only her quick reflexes that saved her as the second swipe came across as she started to get back on her feet. Instinctively, out of the haze of pain, Red ducked just as the other arm cleaved the tree she hit in half, sending it crashing to the ground. There was no time to think, only act. Backing up on her hands and feet, as quickly as her sword joints could take her, her eyes darted around for any cover, any place she could hide, but there was none. The large, white, sheep-looking monster stalked after her, slime dripping from its maw as it eyed up its next meal. Red didn't know how badly hurt she was, just that everything did, but at least she was still moving, until her back hit a rock, a big one. Glancing up, she backed herself right into a small rock alcove.
Oh, no.
This was it. Under the rush of adrenaline, Red could feel herself losing the fight to stay conscious. Probably better that way, based on what the monster was going to do to her. As the blackness started rushing in, she heard a rustling in the trees, then a figure landing in front of her. directly confronting the beast with outstretched arms. The last image Red saw was the big sheep coming to a halt. And the figure in front? Wearing antlers? Red felt herself slowly regaining consciousness, and she hurt all over. Her vision was still hazy, but she could make out a small fire to her left. Blinking a few times, Red eyes cleared, and she found herself in a small makeshift camp. She checked herself, and she was still wearing the same clothes she had before, though her coat was neatly folded next to her. There were some bandages on her arms, probably from where she'd cut herself when the creature nearly threw her across the mire. Otherwise, everything else was where it needed to be. So far, though, she looked to be alone. Red blinked at the bright light coming from her right. It was the same sound she heard before, and now she saw what it was.
Camera?
The camera was being held by a young woman with white hair. In the dark, Red thought she was wearing some kind of headgear or hat, but she couldn't tell for sure. Her face looked kind, though. She was smiling and had colored lines of paint under her eyes. The outfit she was wearing looked like Raider, but could have been Scavenger, too. Seeing her patient was awake, the woman put down the camera and walked over, picking up a small plate from beside the fire and bringing it to her. So far, the woman hadn't said anything, but presented the plate of food to Red. When she took it, Red finally got a good look at her savior and saw antlers? Sure enough, this young woman was wearing antlers on her head. For a seasoned backwoodsman like Red, those kinds of decorations weren't that unusual, and in a way, they seemed to suit the woman quite well.
Thank you for the food, and well, saving my life.
The woman's smile got bigger, and she put a hand on her chest and took a little bow.
Who are you? And where am I exactly? And what happened?
All of the obvious questions flowed out, and the woman listened, then opened her mouth and made another gesture with her hand, followed by using her hands together to make them look like she was writing something in the air. Red was puzzled for a second, then put two and two together.
You can't talk, can you?
The woman nodded, then reached over to pick up a stack of wrinkled papers and an old pencil. She scribbled a few things, then handed the top piece of paper to Red.
No talk, I antlers. Help you. Made Big Shep go away. Antlers, is that your name?
The woman nodded again.
How did you make that big sheep go away?
Antlers made another note and handed it over.
Told you friend, not hurt. Go elsewheres.
That certainly confused Red. That thing was quite frankly the most frightening thing she'd ever seen. And her rescuer didn't talk, so how did she make it go away? Antlers recognized the confused look. She put her hand up and touched her antlers, and then to her chest. That didn't mean much to Red, so Antlers wrote another note.
Talk with heart. Understand them. Understand me. Friends.
It wasn't the craziest thing that Red had ever heard. And she had to admit, she was alive. They sat in silence as Red finished the plate of food. Her benefactor brought her some water, then checked her bandages. When they were removed, she could see that the wounds weren't too deep, and whatever healing salve had been used was already making quick work of the cuts. Red's eyes kept going up to the antlers on top of the woman's head. When she got close, Red looked to see how they were attached, but didn't see any obvious ties or strings. Antlers recognized Red's curiosity and came over to sit down next to her. She smiled and took Red's hand and brought him up to her head. She touched the antlers. They certainly felt real, exactly as she'd felt many times before. Sliding her hand down to the woman's scalp, she expected to find a hat or some other way they were attached.
What in the Sam Hill?
The antlers were attached, but like really, really attached. Her face must have betrayed the surprise because Antlers frowned and backed up a step. She reached up and pulled each one of the antlers, wincing just a little, then pointed to herself.
So, they are attached. Permanently?
Antlers nodded, then reached into her pocket and pulled out smaller, broken antlers, and put them on her head, pantomiming it breaking and falling off.
They can break, too? And grow back?
Antlers clapped her hands together and pointed at Red, letting her know that she got it.
Well, doesn't that beat all? I don't know what to say, other than, lady, you must be unique. I have never heard of anything like you before.
Antlers held up her hand, signaling to Red to hold on. She got up and took a few steps back. Red was confused until she saw Antlers jump straight up and disappear into the trees above.
Whoa!
Red looked up and could barely discern the woman, with a flash of her white hair, as she got to the top and threw herself out into nothing. Red watched in awe as this woman leapt from tree to tree without any apparent effort. Antlers finished her circuit to the little grove and landed back down in front of Red with barely a sound.
Ain't never seen anything like that before, darling.
Red couldn't help herself, despite the soreness, and gave Antlers a small ovation. The woman was a little surprised, or maybe just a little embarrassed, and blushed, but it was quickly replaced with a smile, and she took an exaggerated bow. Antlers plopped back down next to Red and punched her very gently in the shoulder.
I bet you have a great laugh there, Antlers. It's a real shame I can't hear it.
Antlers went back to her pile of papers and scribbled a new note.
Feel better? Yeah, sore, but still alive, thanks to you. Oh, did you have a camera?
Nodding, Antlers reached over and picked up an old, but very well-maintained, photo mode brand camera. She handed it over to Red, who turned it over in her own hand, before bringing it up to her eye and looking around. The lens was clear and the action was crisp. Antlers took very good care of the camera. That was evident.
Do you take a lot of pictures?
Antlers nodded again and wrote another note.
Lots. Take pics of all. Of you, too. Me?
Red guessed she shouldn't have been surprised. Getting up again, Antlers grabbed an old scrapbook, which was full of all different kinds of pictures. As Red flipped through the pages, she saw people, places, and creatures she'd heard of, but had never seen until now. She had to admit, although some of the older shots might have been a bit amateurish, by the end of the shots were phenomenal. And then she came to several pictures of herself.
Wouldn't you look at that? You've been following me for a while, haven't you?
There were pictures of her hiking, preparing food in her camp, and finally even one of her taking that wrong turn just the day before. Antlers had been watching over her shoulder, probably looking for any indication of how Red felt about the pictures.
These are really good.
Mouthing a thank you, Antlers took the book and put it away, while pointing back to the camera. She made the motion of, more.
There's more pictures in there?
Antlers wrote another note and handed it to Red.
You tired, sleep now, show and mourn.
Red was tired and still so sore. She didn't even know what time it was, but it had to be very late. The stars were barely visible above the trees, and the sounds of the mire were subdued into the background.
Good night, Antlers. Thank you.
Red held out her hand, and the two travelers shook. Then Red lay back and closed her eyes, waiting for sleep to take her. Red found herself being shaken awake. Well, not as sore as the night before. It still hurt.
Whoa. Hold your damn horses.
Red opened her eyes to find a very frantic Antlers trying to get her up. Confused, Red questioned her as her benefactor started gathering up her belongings to leave.
What's going on? What's the problem?
Antlers turned and looked scared. She searched around for the paper and pencil before finding it underneath a weighted stone. She scribbled frantically before handing it to Red.
Followed. Bad men. Need go now. Bad men? What are you talking about, Antlers?
Red had no idea what she was trying to say, even as Antlers tried to grab her arm and pull her up.
I ain't getting up until I know what's going on.
Antlers rolled her eyes and grabbed a set of pictures. There must have been the ones she developed overnight, because they were some of the last that she took. Red flipped through them. Sure enough, Antlers had kept following her as she walked right into that big sheep's lair. Red looked up, confused. Antlers stomped her foot, then pointed at one photo, then another, then another. Red looked and didn't see anything. Wait. Oh, hell. She did see something. Sure enough, right at the edge of the camera range, also following Red, was someone. It wasn't just anyone. The person was wearing some kind of camouflage armor, nearly blending into the tree. By the looks of it, between shots, the color seemed to change. Like that damn lizard thing that does that trick. A chameleon. As Red looked at the pictures, Antler shoved another note into her hand.
Followed. Can hear. Be here soon. Must leave. But what about you? You're coming with me, right?
Antler shook her head and made a bunch of crazy motions with her hands, then gave up and wrote another note.
You leave. I protect. Make bad men find big sheep. Not you.
Red didn't know what to say. She didn't know Antlers much at all, and now she was going to risk her life to protect her from who knows what. Grabbing her pack and testing her legs. Yeah, they still worked. She grabbed Antlers by the arm.
I owe you one. Actually, make that two. Just promise me you'll stay safe. And don't do anything. Well, dumb. Okay, darling?
Antlers gave her a smile, then a quick hug before crossing her heart. Then she gently pushed her back and pointed north before mouthing, run. That was enough for Red. She took off running, catching one last glimpse of Antlers as she shot back up into the trees. The trader kept running, finding herself not far from where the big sheep had been, but gone now. She skirted the rotten pile of Brahmin corpses and then cut back to the northeast again. She heard the distinct sound of gunfire behind her.
Oh, jeez. I hope she's okay. Yeah. Sounds like she's a-okay.
As the gunfire and roars echoed through the mire, Red disappeared into the undergrowth, trying to put as much distance between her and her pursuers as possible. And somewhere behind her, Antlers was getting some great new action shots for her collection.
Once upon a time, 27 years after the bombs fell, there were two people, a vault dweller and a California girl. They met and sparks flew. That's when things got interesting. Once Upon a Wasteland is their story. Follow Elizabeth Kirby and Odessa Valdez as they pursue their happily ever after in the post-apocalyptic Appalachian wasteland of Fallout 76. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and many other podcasting platforms. Once Upon a Wasteland, a Fallout 76 love story. Available now.
Now, Sophia, let me run a few more tests. But first, can you tell me how you feel?
Better now, Doctor. I'm sorry to have caused such a fuss.
Nonsense. This latest incident has really got me stumped. For the life of me, I can't figure out what might be causing them. Every test I've run has come back within normal parameters.
Has Modus offered any solutions, Doctor?
He has not, Major, and that might be the most frustrating thing of all.
But it just doesn't make any sense. Something is going on here. We need to get to the bottom of it before it gets any worse.
Andrew, it's okay.
No, Sophia, it isn't. Headaches were one thing. What happened last night, that was something else entirely.
I agree, and I do have a suggestion.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Perhaps we need to get more information on exactly what type of mission Sophia was part of. And there were other crew members on your ship, correct?
Yes, there were four of us. I really hadn't thought about it, but you're right. Waking up alone like that, I didn't dare hope. But if my pod was ejected from the ship, perhaps they were as well.
Modus?
Yes, Doctor?
I know it's a long shot, but you haven't detected anything unusual that could point to another crash site, have you?
With all of the seismic anomalies in the region, it has been problematic to identify any specific instances. However, the Kovac has identified something unusual in the Welch area.
What is it, Modus?
We do not know. Perhaps Commander Daguerre can provide clarification.
A set of photographs appeared on the local terminal. The first was a high-level shot of Welch. There were numerous coal fires burning in the area, and it was hard to make out any real details. The second and third shots revealed much closer pictures of a section of ground on the outskirts of the ruins.
Wait, that looks familiar. Modus, can you get a clearer shot?
Yes, Commander.
The final shot was still grainy, but it revealed a large metallic object sitting in a shallow crater.
That's the escape capsule.
An escape capsule? Sophia, can you be certain?
I'd recognize that anywhere. It's supposed to fit the entire crew. Honestly, I have no idea why I wasn't in it as well, but that could be where the rest of my crew is.
The ash heap is a pretty dangerous place.
We need to get to the bottom of this. If there's any chance that we could find something to help Sophia, I recommend we do it now.
I agree, Andrew. But if it's that dangerous...
It's fine. We can tag along with one of the teams that were heading to the area already.
Shouldn't you check with the Colonel first?
We will inform the Colonel.
But...
Doctor, it's fine. We need to get to the bottom of this, and the more information we have, the better. But if it makes you feel any better, I'll brief the Colonel anyway. She was very concerned about Sophia's episode, and I know she'll be supportive of whatever we need to do.
All right, but I'm going to keep working on these medical scans. I can't help but feel that we're still missing something.
You do that, Doctor. If you do find anything at all, let us know immediately.
Of course.
All right, Sophia. If you're feeling better, let's get you down to the firing range. If we're going to take you out into the field, you should get in some practice. Not that I don't doubt you, but then we can go and see about Reynolds getting you kitted out.
Oh, so exciting, Andrew. My first mission. Well, with the new Enclave.
And depending on how things go, maybe we can stop by the River's Mansion on our way back.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. And who knows, maybe we can pick up some memorabilia from the Mistress of Mystery herself.
Andrew, you have no idea how much that would mean to me.
Think nothing of it.
That's all well and good, Major, but Sophia, if your headaches get worse, I will insist on keeping you here for observation, for your own good.
We'll let you know, Doctor. I promise.
You better. I will not have you, or anyone, putting one of my patients at risk.
Doctor, I appreciate all of your efforts. I just hope this mission can help us figure out what's going on.
Me too, Sophia. Me too.
Stein helped Sophia off the examination table and escorted her out of medical and down the hall. A very concerned Dr. Harefield pulled out the former astronaut's medical scans again. Something didn't feel right. All of her examinations had come back normal. Almost too normal. The doctor made a mental note to do some checking of her own, away from prying eyes.
Protect and serve.
In the early evening of the Savage Divide, a ways north of Foundation, a lone traveler made her way through the scattered undergrowth and up an old path. Every few minutes, she would check a hand-drawn map by the light of her Pip-Boy, before peering ahead to catch a glimpse of her destination. At the top of a rocky outcrop, a figure appeared behind her and tapped her on the shoulder.
Amanda! Oh, you scared me. Again?
Sorry, I just can't help myself. You're too darn cute when you jump like that.
I'm gonna get you back for that.
Looking forward to it.
Ugh, you're incorrigible.
And proud of it, baby doll. Now come here. I can't believe that colonel of yours still has you holed up down at Foundation.
It isn't so bad. We're still making sure vaccine deliveries are going out. And they have the cutest little liberator that Jen and Penny Horn Wright brought back and turned into a pet. Oh, and I got to go down to Watoga.
Sounds like fun. You know, I heard that Raiderbot Rose got herself a pet liberator, too. And Watoga, you'll have to tell me all about it tonight.
You know I can't do that, Amanda. It's secret stuff.
I know. But you can't blame me for asking.
I know. But what's going on? I mean, I'm glad to see you and all, but your message sounded urgent.
Well, baby doll, something really weird happened at the bar. Somebody stopped by and caused a bit of a ruckus. Thought you might know who it was.
Me? I don't know too many raiders, Amanda.
He wasn't a raider. But, did you happen to bring your pistol?
My pistol? Sure. Why do you ask?
Mind if I take a look? I need to check something.
Cindy gave Amanda a bit of a quizzical look and then shrugged, pulling her standard-issue 10mm pistol from its holster and handing it to Amanda.
All right, here you go.
Easy to use and even easier to modify, the 10mm pistol was nearly ubiquitous in the wasteland. Amanda turned the weapon over in her hand and found what she was looking for. There, right on top of the trigger guard, was a small stamped emblem. It was the exact same one on the pistol that the stranger carried and shot Charlie with.
Cindy, what's this?
Oh, wow. I hadn't really noticed that before. It's an old Enclave symbol. Come to think of it, most of the old equipment we use has it. Why do you ask?
Because that stranger who caused all that commotion, he carried a pistol just like this one.
Amanda, that doesn't make any sense. The Colonel is a stickler for losing equipment. You should see the forms we had to fill out. Oh, and don't even get me started on Reynolds. Hey, wait a minute. What did this person look like?
Tall. And I mean really tall, like super mutant tall. Dark hair, close cropped, you know, military deal. Dark eyes, too. Guy was fast, drew his weapon before we could even move. Does that ring any bells?
Cindy thought about it for a few seconds. Then a light bulb went off.
Did he happen to have a bit of an accent?
You know what, baby doll? He did.
Oh no.
What do you mean, oh no? Do you know who it is?
I think so.
So, who is it?
Shadow.
Shadow. What kind of stupid name is that?
Amanda, I should not be telling you this, but he's really dangerous.
Come on, baby doll. I deal with dangerous all the time. I mean, I'm dangerous too, you know?
No, you don't understand. He's like Lilith dangerous. But he's not supposed to be around here.
How do you know that? Did they tell you everything at that bunker of yours?
Of course not. But we still get our duty assignments, and they tell me if anyone is going to be in the area just in case something goes wrong.
He was definitely on a mission of some sort. And he shot Charlie.
Amanda, you need to tell me exactly what happened.
Amanda frowned, but then went through the whole evening. When she got to the part of the old man with the straw hat, Cindy stopped her.
And he was looking for who again?
An astronaut.
And Shadow kidnapped him.
He did. Shot Charlie, threatened to kill me, but hey, that's par for the course. Then he was just gone with Mr. Astronaut Crazy Pants.
Cindy got real quiet.
Baby doll, what's wrong?
Amanda, I'm sorry, but I gotta go. I don't know exactly what's going on, but I think it's bad. I need to report back.
What if this is some kind of secret mission? I mean, you do keep a lot of secrets.
This is different. I can't tell you exactly why, but I have a bad feeling about this.
Amanda had never seen Cindy so concerned before.
Listen, baby doll. If this is serious, then you need to be careful. You don't just want to announce to the world what you know. Getting on the radio and just blabbering about it probably isn't a good idea.
Cindy thought about that for a minute.
You're right.
Of course I am. Been around the block a few times. Might have a few tricks up my sleeve from my time with Beth.
Ugh, Beth again?
We've been over that already, but this is serious. I'm gonna come back to Foundation with you. We can hash out the plan on the way, okay?
All right, but we need to be really careful. I mean, I don't want Paige, Ward, or Day asking too many questions either.
Deal. Now, here's your pistol. Wait here while I head back to the spider's web to let Charlie know where I'll be. I shouldn't be gone too long.
Thanks, Amanda. Oh, and could you tell him sorry? Hope he feels better soon.
No worries, baby doll. Be right back.
Cindy watched Amanda walk back towards the spider's web. She was extremely conflicted and hated the idea of getting Amanda involved in whatever this was. Maybe she was right and it was nothing, but there was always something about Shadow that bothered her. And if it involved the astronaut, Sophia Daguerre, then that meant it might also involve Major Stein. None of it made any sense, and that worried Cindy even more. About an hour later, Cindy saw Amanda round the corner with her pack and a rifle slung over her shoulder.
All right, that's taken care of. Let's go.
Amanda put her arm around Cindy and gave her a quick peck on the lips before leading her down the path in the direction of Foundation.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chris.
And I'm not!
We're not doing that routine right now. We're trying to do an advertisement.
Oh, fine. I'm Sir Aloysius Pernicious, the better half of the team at One Wall Comedy.
Okay, I wouldn't go that far. Anyway, come check us out on YouTube. We're your number one source for independent sketch comedy on the internet.
Yeah, because that's such a big market.
All right, come on. Let's get out of here.
I'm getting paid for this, right?
Don't push your luck.
Thank you.
The new Enclave Operations Center was a beehive of activity. From the various terminals and communications equipment connected to the regional surveillance network and the Kovac Muldoon satellite, it was possible to track their own teams, their allies, and threats across all of Appalachia. However, on this particular day, operations was working anything but smoothly.
What do you mean Lieutenant Jones hasn't reported in?
Sir, he checked in when he arrived at the Westech listening post as ordered, but he missed the last two.
Well, did you contact Sergeant Tyson? Please don't play dumb, Private.
Sorry, sir. I can't raise the sergeant either.
Did you try the rest of the team?
Yes, sir. In fact, the whole Westech perimeter has gone radio silent.
And you didn't think to report this earlier?
Well, I did, and I am. We haven't gotten any other unusual reports. This happened just all of a sudden.
The duty officer scowled. For all the time and effort put into turning a bunch of vault rats into actual professional soldiers, they still required so much hand-holding. He'd served in Alaska and Canada before the Great War, and despite those years in Vault 76, he never truly left the Army behind.
Private, in the future, any deviation from the standard reporting schedule is to be reported immediately. Do you understand?
Yes, sir. I understand, sir.
Good. But that doesn't solve this particular problem. Give me everything you have. I need to go speak to the colonel.
Yes, sir.
The private handed over the transcript of Lieutenant Jones' previous report, along with all notes regarding what was going on around Westech. Unfortunately, what they did know about what was going on wasn't much at all. The duty officer walked up towards the colonel's office. He'd known his fair share of hard-nosed COs in the war, but this one, despite her age, was cut from a completely different cloth. He'd been there at the bog with her, watched this young vaulter stand in the face of a monster and not flinch, not turn away. He had respected her before, bringing order to the bunker and giving them a mission, but after that battle, she had given them all a purpose. Valeria was looking over the latest production reports, with mounting dissatisfaction, when there was a knock at the door.
Come in.
The duty officer walked in, saluted, and stood at attention.
What is it, Captain?
Ma'am, we've lost contact with our team at Westech. I know this should have been caught earlier, and I apologize. I've spoken with the communications specialist already.
Lost contact? What does that mean exactly?
Lieutenant Jones arrived at Westech on schedule and reported in on schedule. However, he missed his next two scheduled reports. Now, this isn't unusual necessarily. With some of the atmospheric interference we get from passing rad storms, but nearly simultaneously we lost contact with our perimeter listening posts around Westech.
All of them?
Yes, ma'am. The automatic monitoring systems ceased functioning sometime after Jones's last check-in. And, to be on the safe side, I also requested the status report of Huntersville listening posts.
And?
They aren't working either.
The duty officer watched the colonel's brow furrow and the scars around her silver eye twitch.
Modus!
Yes, Colonel?
Why am I just now finding out that our systems responsible for monitoring the super mutant situation are no longer functioning?
Colonel, we recorded a system fault. Attempts are being made to restore access.
Modus, based on what I am being told, we also lost contact with our personnel on site. That doesn't sound like a system fault to me.
We have detected no unusual activity within the designated areas, Colonel.
Our team is currently MIA, Modus. That in itself is unusual. I also seem to recall Sergeant Tyson submitting some reports regarding strange supermutant behavior.
We agree. However, the sergeant's reports are unsubstantiated. Our priorities have been directed elsewhere.
Modus! Our people are our priority. More importantly, we know the supermutants are dangerous. We need to reestablish communication with our team and find out what's going on. Do you understand?
Certainly, Colonel. We will comply with your directive. However, if contact cannot be established with our assets, then a more manual solution may be required.
Sending more of our people into harm's way without reliable intelligence? My father warned me about leaping before looking, Modus.
We will do what we can, Colonel. We too are limited in what we can accomplish with our current assets.
Use whatever means you have available, Modus. I expect an update by this afternoon.
Understood, Colonel.
The duty officer shifted uncomfortably. He wasn't sure how he felt about being privy to the conversations between the Colonel and Modus, but he agreed that sending more new Enclave field operatives into the unknown was a losing proposition. He snapped back to attention when the Colonel turned her gaze back to him.
Captain, reach out to our contacts in the field. Traders, scavengers, settlement leaders, whoever we know in the areas around West Tech and Huntersville. Just see if they've heard anything. If they ask why, we're just collecting additional intelligence.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. I expect an update from you as well by this afternoon. And as much as I don't want to, put Teams Alpha and Beta on alert.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, and that includes Bitter and Sullivan? I think they need a reminder that they are still, in fact, field operatives and not professional poker players.
Of course, ma'am. And Major Stein?
The Major is presently engaged. Captain, just get me as much information as you can, and get the teams prepped. Dismissed.
Giving a final salute, the duty officer put his cap back on and left the colonel's office. Orders were passed along to the teams, and his communications staff started reaching out to their field contacts. As he looked up at the large map of Appalachia on a central display, a new update was posted. The area around West Tech and Huntersville, formerly known as the Super Mutant Exclusion Zone, was now replaced with an opaque black circle representing their loss of information about what was occurring within the region. The duty officer sat down behind a communications terminal. He had his own list of contacts to reach out to, including a particular Blue Ridge Caravan trader scheduled to pass through the affected area in just a few days.
Subject SH-189A, and we believe Subject A-724B was with it, but did not engage.
I'll forward your report to Bravo Team. That's their little mess to clean up, not yours. Priority is to re-establish contact with the courier and maintain surveillance. Understood?
Yes, sir. Clearside protocol initiated, and we should reacquire the target shortly.
Excellent. Command out.
Sloppy work.
Under the circumstances, Doctor, they've done quite well. And remember, it was your idea to engage the courier.
She has proven to be extremely resourceful. Subject SH-189A's involvement is problematic. Worse, if Subject A-724B is still active, then Bravo's containment breach was worse than we were told.
That's none of your concern, Dr. Blackburn.
Oh. My apologies. I didn't hear you come in. I did express my reservations regarding the mutagen research, Director.
And they were noted. However, I believe healthy competition between our research teams has provided us with excellent results thus far. And Bravo's subjects have proven to be a useful distraction. Wouldn't you agree?
In some cases, yes, but...
Then I don't expect to hear more about it. I will discuss Subject A724B with Bravo myself, if that would help alleviate your concerns.
Of course, Director.
Good. Now, I expect an update on our Phase 2 operations at our council meeting tonight.
And you shall have it. Our enhanced subjects have exceeded expectations already, and we expect even greater results in the coming days.
That's very good to hear, and we look forward to your full report this evening. There are growing concerns about the Delta pacification efforts. Any recommendations to speed up Project Onai would be looked upon favorably by the Council.
I'll see what I can do. Thank you, Director Hornwright.
Hi, I'm Fire Rider, and I'm the host of The Pixel People, a podcast dedicated to taking a close look at our favorite characters from our favorite video games. From major characters who define the course of a game's storyline to smaller characters who you might have never noticed. Every week, we go beyond the quest line to examine a particular character's story arc and choices, and discover the real-world parallels and life lessons hidden just below the surface. I hope you'll join us. You can find The Pixel People on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again, members, for joining us here on The Modus Files. If you've enjoyed this content, please subscribe. And better yet, please leave a review to help others find our little enclave. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Modus Files, for more information about our podcast, Fallout 76 content, and random musings on the Enclave. I'd also like to thank our cast, Pandora Beatrix as Colonel Valeria Faustina, XO1 King as Major Andrew Stein, Chrissy Williams as Trader Red, Lucy Middleton as Amanda, Maria Cheshire as Lieutenant Cindy Connors, Jessica Starr as Commander Sophia Daguerre, Aaron McNamara as Dr. Harefield, Lane McNulty as the Duty Officer, Austin Landis as the Private, Josh Smith as Grey 9, Eric Gold as Grey Command, Mark Hosworth as Dr. Blackburn, introducing Kirsty Harrison as Director Evelyn Hornwright, and Brad Williams as the voice of Modus. A very special thank you to Zero Fox FK for allowing the use of his character, Antlers, and a shout out to the Apocalyptic Aristocracy Discord, the Fallout for Hope charity drive for St. Jude's Children's Hospital, the Robots Radio Rocket Club and the rest of the Robots Radio podcast community, our extensive group of voice actors and fellow creators, and Jeremiah Johnson, a great character artist responsible for the fantastic artwork on our website. Stay tuned for our next exciting episode, Rising Tide. Lastly, thank you to all of our subscribers and supporters. God bless the Enclave, and God bless America.
Members, we look forward to your next visit to our little Enclave.